We Need Bright Ideas Now. That was the title of a panel discussion and screening of Inconvenient Truth, held by the Vancouver Point Grey New Democratic Party at the Ridge Theatre, February 12, 2007. All the speakers are available from www.ecoshock.org.
Our next speaker is Dr. Bill Rees. Dr. Rees earned his PhD in population ecology from the University of Toronto and has taught at the University of British Columbia School of Community and Regional Planning since 1970, where he teaches the ecological basis for human development. He is the originator of the ecological footprint analysis and a founding member of the Canadian Society for Ecological Economic. The Vancouver Sun has described Dr. Rees as one of BC's top public intellectuals. And last year, Dr. Rees was elected as a fellow of the Royal Society of Canada. Dr. Bill Rees will be speaking on the economic effects of climate change. Welcome, Dr. Rees.
Thank you very much, Heather. I'm actually going to talk mostly about something called the Stern Report, which some of you will know was an economic report to the British government released on October 30th of last year. This report is one of a string of reports from economists. If we can go to the next slide, please. It really starts from the basic science. In fact, there's no new science whatsoever in the Stern Report. And I'm going to sound a little bit cynical here, because despite the fact that there's no new science here, until the recent IPCC report, the Stern Report seems to have been more effective in waking people up to the reality of the problem, because it's money-based, than any of the science preceding. But just because it's an economist talking here doesn't mean there's any absolute truth in what Stern has to say. So I want to move back about a decade or more to what some previous economists have had to say about climate change. If we can move forward, please. Here are three quotes, all from very well-known papers from very prominent economists on climate change. They all have two things in common. The first is the totally incorrect assumption that agriculture is the only sector of the economy likely to be affected. The second is they agree that agriculture is only about 3% of gross domestic product, or gross world product, in fact. Now, when we look at that, look at the middle quote, because it really captures what the others two do as well. Since agriculture is only 3% of GDP, even if net output of agriculture falls by 50%, this is only a 1.5% cut in gross domestic product, in this case in Britain. The same is true in Canada or the United States. Notice the ludicrous assumption here that the world could sustain a loss of half of its food production when 2 billion people are already malnourished, and the only impact would be a 1.5% hit in GDP per capita. The Nordhaus quote preceding that makes exactly the same point and is an extremely influential economic report that has really shaped U.S. climate change. So we have to be a little bit careful in understanding what these earlier reports said, and it helps to shape our reaction to Stern. If we can go to the next slide. Well, we've already had some of these statistics. We know the present concentration of greenhouse, or the pre-industrial concentration. We know the present concentration in terms of carbon dioxide equivalents in parts per million. The main point is the middle bullet here. With likely increasing accelerating emissions, we could reach 550 parts per million CO2 equivalent by as early as 2035, which would bring a 77% chance of exceeding the 2 degree Celsius maximum temperature rise that Philip has indicated is really an extremely important number to keep in mind. A 77% chance of meeting this disastrous level of warming by just about 30 years from now. If we go to the next slide, pardon me, slide, please. Here are some of the impacts that Stern admits are likely to result from a slightly increased temperature beyond that 2 degree limit, which he says is probable, or at least likely. Major declines in crop yields over entire regions. Sea level rise threatening London, Shanghai, New York, Tokyo, Hong Kong, Richmond, Cairo, and areas inhabited by 5% of the world's people. We will see refugees, about 350 million if we take 5% of the 7 billion population that's likely to be on the planet by 2035. There was an article just last week in the Vancouver Sun showing that the RCMP are already looking at the consequences for Canada of having to deal with a huge increase in the number of immigrants. The collapse of the Amazon rainforest, possible collapse of the Gulf Stream, collapse of all the world's major glaciers and major flood risk. We've already heard about that with the rise in sea level. A loss of up to 40% of the world's species, major health epidemics, and so on. This is a short list of the likely consequences of a likely scenario over the next, the rest of this century. What he concludes in the end is extremely important and vastly different from the conclusions of the previous economics reports that have had so much influence on policy just in the last decade. His minimal projection is that allowing things to proceed business as usual, the scenario we saw a moment ago, would result in as much as a 20% loss of GDP, much greater than the 1.5%, a minimal loss of GDP on the order of 5% is possible. He argues that with only 1% of GDP invested each year, the world can avoid these huger costs, and therefore the bottom line is that reducing the expected adverse impacts of climate change is both highly desirable and feasible. Tell that to our present government, who are not willing to spend a dime really on doing what is necessary to make the deep cuts necessary here. The other point I want to make is that the numbers in the Stern report, I won't even get into them because they're extremely suspect in the sense that one of the most difficult things to do is to estimate the real value of ecological impacts and intangibles in an increasingly chaotic world where we can't really well predict what the consequences are likely to be. Next slide, please. This is the really important one from the perspective of everyone in this room. To stabilize atmospheric greenhouse gas concentrations at between 500 and 550 parts per million, that's the level at which, beyond which more than 2 degree increase in temperature can be expected, will require a more than an 80% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. Everything we do, about 85 to 90% of the energy basis of techno-industrial society is currently derived from fossil fuels. In the next 35 to 50 years, we must abandon 80% or more of the fossil fuels we use to power our economies. And as a somewhat student of alternative energy, I can say that in total, the current technologies available to us as substitutes won't come close to replacing the dramatic decline in fossil fuels that we must begin to enter into if we're going to achieve the necessary target. In the short term, we must see a CO2 emissions peak within the next decade or so, highly unlikely given the trajectory that China and India are on. China brings a new power plant capable of powering a city the size of Vancouver every week to 10 days. And this is primitive coal-fired power technology because we won't sell them the technology necessary to make it clean technology. Talk about shooting ourselves in the foot. Recommended actions, next slide please. Here I think the report really gets soft because there's nothing here that we haven't heard 10,000 times before, and even here in these soft recommendations, not much is happening. We must reduce demand for emission-intensive goods and services. In other words, shift consumer behavior. Instruments here should include carbon taxes. The fact of the matter is that people respond to price increases. The only time in the history of humanity that per capita energy declined for a period of several years was between 1978, roughly, and 1983, and that was the period during the Arab oil embargo and the Iran war, during which time real prices rose for fossil fuels to higher levels than we're experiencing today. The effect was a dramatic decrease in per capita and therefore gross energy consumption. Notice the world did not fall apart. The result was the invention of the Honda Civic and other efficient technologies. Canada took the world lead in wind power technology. We quickly drop it as soon as oil prices return to quote unquote normal, which means energy consumption once again began to go up. The main point is that every political party in Canada has sworn, now I may be wrong about the NDP on this one, but certainly both the Liberals and Conservatives have said, never will we have a carbon tax or resource depletion taxes in this country. That's precisely the most powerful tool in the current kit box of tools that would help us to reduce our carbon emissions. Let's move to the next slide very quickly. There has been a number of very strongly worded reactions to the Stern report. In general, there is concurrence, if reluctant concurrence, but the Stern report still hasn't dispelled deep denial. The Cato Institute in Washington, the American Enterprise Institute, are both dead set against it. In the case of the Cato Institute, they claim that the Stern report flies in the face of academic literature on the subject, which finds that climate change would have only a moderately negative impact at best. There are as many economic gains associated with warming as there are economic costs. The American Enterprise Institute, very closely tied to the Cato Institute, has just been given a major award by the petroleum industry in the United States to pay scientists $10,000 to come forward to discredit the IPCC report and therefore the Stern document. My final slide is about our money-obsessed society. This is where my cynicism comes in here. It's interesting to me that scientists have been warning us for decades about the impending problem. Here's one from 1992 from the Union of Concerned Scientists. We, the undersigned senior members of the world scientific community, hereby warn all humanity of what lies ahead. A great change in our stewardship of the Earth and of the life on it is required if vast human misery is to be avoided and our global home on this planet is not to be irretrievably mutilated. That kind of warning has been repeated for a decade or more now with increasingly strident tones and falls on deaf ears, hardly reported in the newspapers. But as soon as somebody puts a money price on this, it's not good enough that we destroy the planet. But if we know that it costs several to several tens of trillions of dollars, then we pay attention. There's something wrong, it seems to me, with our value system when we only respond to the money charge. Thank you very much.
We need bright ideas now. That was the title of a panel discussion and screening of Inconvenient Truth, held by the Vancouver Point Grey New Democratic Party at the Ridge Theatre, February 12, 2007. All the speakers are available from www.ecoshock.org.